Welcome to episode 6 of Shortwave Weekly. I am your host, Chris Freitas, and I'm just going to tell you right off the bat that we do not have the interview for this week with our listener, with the listener, Pete Johnson. I did, however, talk to him on the phone a week or so ago, and he was discussing more about his plan to incorporate companies, investors, to invest in a network, sort of like World Radio Network, where shortwave broadcasters can be heard on local FM stations and on shortwave, satellite, what have you. I'm going to try to get that interview from him soon, or another big name in shortwave. So I'll post up more information as that becomes available, but like previous episodes, this week we have some shortwave news, and then on Media Guide we are going to be talking about Radio Canada International, and we also, for this week's clip of audio clip, we showcase WWCR. So I hope you all enjoy that, and then a few other goodies and some other news to mention. That is all coming to you here on Shortwave Weekly. All right, let's get to some bits of shortwave radio news in the international world of broadcasting. Botswana ignores Zimbabwe's threats over VOA. This is by Media Network, and here's what this is. This is written by Andy Sinnott. Hope I pronounced your name right. Botswana has said it no longer listens to complaints from Zimbabwe over the Voice of America broadcast relayed through its territory. Zimbabwe government newspaper The Herald published a story this week accusing Botswana of hosting what it called pirate radio station from Voice of America. The paper said that Zimbabwe will make a formal complaint to Botswana over VOA. Zimbabwe accuses VOA of beaming hate messages to its people in violation of the power-sharing agreement. Zimbabwe says this threatens the survival of its coalition government. The Herald accused the Botswana government of lobbying for regime change in Zimbabwe. However, the coordinator of Botswana Government Communications and Information Services, Dr. Jeff Ramsey, said that they were used to threats, but they can do little because nothing illegal is going on. He said that VOA does its broadcasting from Washington in the United States, and Botswana is the only hosting its relay station in the country. He said that there are many European, American, French, and Chinese shortwave and medium-wave radio stations with relays in Africa. For instance, South Africa is hosting a relay for BBC, he said. He said that he is aware of the VOA program, Studio 7, that Zimbabwe is complaining about is produced in Washington by Zimbabweans, and it touches on the situation in that country, and to some extent it is crucial or critical. He said that Botswana will not just terminate the agreement it has with VOA for as long as it is in the best interest of the country. The VOA has had a relay station in Botswana since the early 1970s, but Zimbabwe started complaining about it in 2003. And here is another item in the news. Sale of Radio France International Sofia confirmed. A business group in the Bulgarian coastal town of Verna has signed an agreement with the acquisition of RFI Sofia, part of Radio France International. This was announced officially by the French broadcaster, confirming earlier reports. The sale deal was signed at the end of November. The buyer of the Varzadane Verna 2009 Association, which is believed to give its name to the radio after sealing the sale deal. The buyer has committed to keep unchanged the information and music format of the radio, as well as the hot link with RFI, the statement said. Adding to the negotiations are underway for the signing of the agreement, which will allow the use of RFI programs. And finally, here is the last bit of news. This actually comes from Shortwave Central, and I'm actually going to talk about them near the end of this podcast. Give a special thanks to them. I'll tell you more about that in a few moments. But here is some news. This is from Shortwave Central. American radio stations in Australia. Some time ago, we presented the story of the American shortwave station in Australia that was established under General Douglas MacArthur for communication with American units in the Pacific and in the continental United States. This shortwave transmitter facility was established in Hemnet, which is an outer suburb of Brisbane in Queensland, and it was on the air for a period of 3 or more years with the usage of several units, including a 10-kilowatt federal transmitter and a 40-kilowatt press wireless transmitter. The shortwave receiver station was located half a dozen miles distant in another outer suburb, Kapalaba. It is true that this station was established primarily for armed forces communication purposes during the later half of World War II. However, there were many occasions when it was in use for forwarding the news information to the United States, and even voice reports for rebroadcast by the medium wave networks in the United States. Since the researching and writing of this topic, we have discovered that there was a whole network of at least 10 of these American communication stations in Australia beginning in the year 1942. These stations were used mainly for teletype transmissions as well as communications in high-speed Morse code. The very first of these American radio stations in Australia was installed in a suburb of Melbourne, the capital of the southeastern state of Victoria. This unit became operational on March 10, 1942, just 2 weeks before General MacArthur arrived in the city by train. The Melbourne station was a joint operation between American and Australian personnel, and under MacArthur, it was in service under the American call sign WTJJ. This Melbourne station, WTJJ, received messages from the Philippines and elsewhere via WVJK in Darwin, and forwarded them to the U.S. via the Army station WTJ in Hawaii. In view of the long-range transmission from WTJJ Melbourne, we would presume that this transmitter was rated at least 10 kilowatts, and probably more likely at 40 kilowatts. It was around this time that another temporary station was installed, this time on a railway train, for use on various areas in eastern Australia. The train facility was made up of teletype transmitters, probably three of them, rated at 3 kilowatts and manufactured by Hallicrafters for use in airplanes. Another one of these stations was installed in Sydney, North South Wales, and was on the air under the American Army call sign WVJM. This station communicated with American Army communications stations located in Melbourne, Brisbane, and Townsville. In the northern east state of Queensland, three or more of these radio stations were established for communications within Australia and beyond. These stations were located in Brisbane and Townsville. Initially, the first Brisbane station was installed temporarily in a tent in the Redlands Bay Golf Course, some distance north of Brisbane itself. The substantial building was quickly erected, and it housed a 10-kilowatt federal transmitter with five Rumbrick antennas nearly 100 feet tall. Another temporary station with a 1-kilowatt federal transmitter was installed on the Girls High School of Somerville House, Brisbane, for communication with Sydney and Townsville. The two temporary stations in Brisbane, Redlands Golf Course and Somerville House, were closed in February 1943 when the more substantial facilities at Hemnet and Kapalaba were inaugurated. The American Communication Station WVJL in Townsville in northern Queensland was located adjacent to the coastal radio station, which housed the transmitters for the AWA Maritime Station VIT and the local medium-wave broadcast station 4TO. During this era, VIT-4TO communicated with the VIG Port Moresby as part of the wartime Coast Watch service. The Port Moresby transmitter was the old medium-wave unit 4PM, which had been converted for shortwave telegraphy usage. In the Northern Territory, there were two American shortwave communication stations, one near Darwin itself, right on the north coast, and the other on the Adelaide River, 75 miles inland. The Darwin station was identified as WVJK, and the inland station was KAZ. The inland station initially handled all American traffic from the Philippines, and in 1944 it transferred to Hollandia in Dutch New Guinea. But that's another story for another time. Suffice to say, to each of these 10 known American communication radio stations handled communication traffic, as well as, at times, media messages for broadcasts and publication. The stronger stations, and in particular the 40-kilowatt unit on the edge of urban Brisbane, has also carried voice messages for relay and medium wave throughout the United States. And this news, while posted on Shortwave Central, was by Adrian Peterson of Adventist World Radio. And that does it with our shortwave news. And now here is a clip, her audio clip. This is from WWCR, located in Nashville, which, geographically speaking, is about 200 miles northeast of Memphis, about four to five hours drive from the city of Memphis. And so I can get the station very loud and clear on all the frequencies that broadcasts throughout the world, I assume. But I can get them pretty loud and clear. It's not within the skip zone, so you'll hear this pretty good signal. Although at the time, last night was not a very good shortwave listening night on many shortwave stations. Last night being December 7th. I'm not sure if any of you had problems tuning into some of these stations, but I got a lot of static last night mixed in with some of the audio. So, but normally though, it's very good signal, and so hopefully tonight will be better. But nonetheless, here is a recording. This is from 3215 kilohertz, recorded at about 0200 UTC.
Well, you know, Ken Pagano was an ordained minister and involved in pastoral ministry for 30 years, just about 29 and a half years, and always been involved in sports shooting and competitive things of that nature, and a concealed carry weapons instructor with the Department of Justice here in Kentucky. Last year, we decided to try to do something a little different. It was really a church-oriented type of deal to just touch some people in our community that we might not normally come in contact with. I mean, I did, but maybe not the church as a whole. So we decided to have an open carry celebration. And when we did, because it wasn't illegal, it wasn't immoral, it wasn't unbiblical, and it wasn't unconstitutional, and even made some requests at the chain of command in our denomination and got the nod of approval, until the thing became an international phenomenon. And then when the denomination was starting to get some flack and our insurance company decided to drop us, then we really started to see just what a nerve that we had hit. And it was a great success.
So you said it went worldwide. You actually made news worldwide.
You know what? We're still getting some things. Matter of fact, just 2 weeks ago, a television crew from Sweden came in to do a documentary where I work at Bluegrass Range here in Louisville, and to talk about guns and our open carry celebration. I still get emails trickling in from Italy and around the world. So yeah, I mean, it went everywhere.
Which way does the scales tip? To the favorable side or unfavorable?
Oh, more than 90% are favorable.
I mean, fantastic.
It was just amazing how, it's kind of like what's going on, I guess, maybe with people like Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck and others.
Mm-hmm.
They're just grassroots people saying, enough is enough. We need some conservatism again. We need some people willing to stand up to speak for the guy who doesn't have a voice, ordinary people who believe in this country, believe in what it was and what it can be again, but we're going to have to stand up and fight for it. More than 90% were positive.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me that that people don't realize. Of course, they haven't studied. I know that. That's a big study, but this is, you see, it's biblical, and it is. It's constitutional, it is. Not only that, but our founding fathers, almost to the man, including the pastors, carried guns to church with them.
Yes, and it was law in the pre-colonial days that you had to attend church with a firearm. They recognize that we live at that time living in a very uncivilized frontier. But you know what? We live in a civilized society, but we still have a lot of uncivilized people. Human nature hasn't changed since the fall of Adam and Eve.
Actually,
if they recognized it then, our founding fathers, and there's people across the globe, even around Israelis and synagogues in Israel, they recognize the need to protect themselves during worship. Why should we not?
And that clip was, again, from WWCR, located in Nashville, Tennessee. And that will be the station that we'll highlight next time on Shortwave Weekly on the Media Guide. We'll talk more about them and their programming. You may already know some of it, but for others who have never heard of WWCR, that's just a little snippet of what they broadcast. And speaking of Media Guide, this week we're going to be talking about Radio Canada International. Radio Canada International has been in broadcasting since 1945. Its mandate is to increase awareness of Canadian values as well as its social, economic, and cultural activities to specific areas around the world. And it's also made its main focus more recently towards immigrants to Canada, newer immigrants. And so its programming is more focused on that. And recently, meaning recently, a couple years back or so, they had changed their programming to a 1 hour or two hour program almost every day, Monday through Friday, or in UTC time, that would be Tuesday through Saturday. They have a 2 hour program called The Link. And this can be heard via shortwave as well as satellite, the internet, and various public and radio stations throughout the world. And this program is called The Link. It's a 2 hour show that comes on Tuesday through Saturday UTC, and it's aimed towards immigrants or prospecting immigrants who want to move to Canada. And so it gives information, news, and stories about Canada and its and history and the and culture and what's happening inside of Canada to give you some idea of what's going on. This is pretty much what all shortwave stations have done. And Radio Canada International had different programs devoted to talking about various aspects of its country. You had stuff like SciTech File, various other programs that were there. SciTech File is the only thing I can think of at the top of my head. But there were other programs there that it had, you know, basically what shortwave stations have done. One program devoted to news. Then you had a program that talked about the economy, then a program on political issues. Basically, The Link is a combination of all the programs that RCI once had, and it's sort of melded into a two-hour program. Some people have expressed praise about it. Some people don't like it at all, and they want the original programs back. Personally, I think it's good. I think it's good. Now I can understand what people's frustrations are with having all this into one program. You obviously have to have shorter stories to talk about each little different aspect. That's true, but at least, you know, it covers a broad range of different topics and issues. And even though it may be shorter than what you would hear on a specific program like SciTech File, you'll hear something about science development in Canada that may be very interesting, and then you'll progress to a story that is something about maybe a political story or some wacky thing that's happening inside of Canada. It's a good program. I like it very much whenever I can get a chance to tune in. But it's not the only program it has. There is a weekend edition of The Link, which is a summary of what happened throughout the week. And then on on Sundays, or Monday UTC, Sunday being Central Time. On Mondays UTC, Monday evenings, there is Maple Leaf Mailbag, which is read by Ian Jones. Listener letters, questions, some he reads listener mails, and there are interviews with other listeners who have special guests. Maybe some snippet of shortwave news, and it's pretty much what you expect from mailbag program. It's pretty good too. Trying to remember who does the link. The link is done by the name Mark Montgomery. It's done by Mark Montgomery. I don't know what shows he's done in the past, but the link is hosted by Mark Montgomery. And then the Maple Leaf Mailbag is hosted by Ian Jones. Sometimes he'll have Terry Haig co-hosted with him. He's on there every now and then, but now it's pretty much headed by Ian Jones. So those basically are your two main broadcasters with RCI. Now that there's only basically two programs, but there is also another program. This is more geared towards South Asia, or it is more geared towards South Asia. It's called Marsala Canada, and it's a mix of stories, news events, topics, music, and various things from South Asian perspective. And this is hosted by a guy called Wotek Giazada. I don't know if I pronounced that name right. I'm not very good with pronouncing names, but Wotek Giazada. And this is a weekly radio program that deals with various things like culture, art, the arts, economics, politics, etc., about what's going on in South Asia. And this can be heard on shortwave and throughout the internet, towards South Asia and around the world. And so, here is, these are three programs that can be heard. Marsala Canada is a weekly program along with Maple Leaf Mailbag, and the link is its daily program. So here is a list of English broadcasts for Radio Canada International, what times you can hear them and what frequencies on 0:00 to 0:57 UTC. You can hear the broadcast on 9880 kilohertz to Southeast Asia, and of course on Mondays is Maple Leaf Mailbag, then Tuesday through Saturday is the link, and on Sunday is Marsala Canada from 0500 to 0104 UTC. You can hear Radio Canada International in the central U.S. on 9755 kilohertz, and the same program is the same programming on those particular days is the same throughout pretty much all of these times that I'm giving you. On let's say in English, at 100 to 200 UTC on 6165 and 7255 kilohertz, you can hear RCI in India at this particular time. And at 100 to 200 UTC, you can hear Radio Canada International on the same frequency, 9755 to the central U.S. Excuse me, take that back. That's actually Mandarin. If you want to listen to the Mandarin broadcast, excuse me on that, disregard the 0105 time I just gave you. Scrolling down to English broadcast. I do the English listening mainly because I know there's some out there that just want to listen to English. I do. So, if you want to check out the whole guide, the list of different languages you can hear this on, you can go to the RCI website at rcinet.ca and click on schedules and frequencies, and you can download a PDF file that has the schedule. You can print it out and keep it for your reference, or keep it on computer or paper, whatever you like. At 1500 to 1600 UTC in India, you can hear it at 9635 and 11975 kilohertz. Into the northeastern U.S., you can hear it at 1505 to 1604 UTC on 9610 kilohertz. And if you have DRM, you can hear it at 9800 kilohertz. That's if you have DRM, which most of us probably will not. At 1605 to 1704 UTC, you can hear it at the same time and at the same frequencies to the northeastern United States. That's the second half of the programming. And 1800 to 1859 UTC in sub-Saharan Africa, you can hear RCI on 9740, 11845, 13650, 15365, and 17790 kilohertz. And let's see here. And to the northeastern U.S., this is for DRM only. If you can hear it at 22 to 2300 UTC at 9800 kilohertz DRM. And finally, 2305 to 0004 UTC, you can hear it in the central U.S. at 9755 kilohertz. Seems like most of this is broadcast more towards, at least the English portions are more broadcast towards the U.S. and in India and sub-Saharan Africa, mostly to U.S. It seems like most of their English broadcasts are geared to the U.S. Not instead of other parts of the world. I don't even see any European transmissions. In fact, now I remember that they no longer broadcast in English to Europe. They ended that back about a year or so ago. So, and also the reason why they have this 2-hour long program where everything's melded together is, of course, budget cuts. Fortunately, though, they're still on the air, so we can give some sort of props to Radio Canada International for being on the air as long as it has been, and hopefully they will continue to be on the air. And finally, I want to give a shout out to, I would do it for all of the fans who recently joined Facebook, but there are a few fans that joined. With all the fans that are there and the ones that have joined recently since the last podcast episode was released, I would like to thank you all for joining it. But I want to give a special shout out to the person who is responsible for the Shortwave Central blog page, and I had her letter, Gail Van Horn. Hope I pronounced your name correctly. She's the one who posts the news on Shortwave Central, and I've asked to link her site with mine, and just to give some information about the podcast. And thankfully, she added that to to the website, and you can look at that on Shortwave Central. You have to look at older posts because this was about a week ago. But I just want to give a shout out to her, Gail Van Horn. She actually works, if I remember right, she works with the Moderning Times magazine. So at least we know where she's getting most of her information from, is from doing research with that. A couple of people I want to shout out to real quick also. There's another guy here. I'm just checking the email messages as I'm looking through here. And if you want to send me an email, you can. My email address is chrisfreitas FREITAS. It's all one word. Chris Freitas 2003@yahoo.com. That's Chris Freitas 2003@yahoo.com. There was another piece of news, and I'll get to the next shout out in just a moment. One piece of news which I completely forgot about, and this is some really good news. Jonathan Murphy sent this news to me through Facebook. Some positive news about Radio Prague's transmissions. The cuts are still 20%, but the shortwave transmissions will remain in reduced form from foreign transmitters. This will keep Radio Prague as a radio-oriented radio station and not send it down the path of a web info service. And you can see the discussions on the shortwave about Radio Prague on the Save Radio Prague page on Facebook, where it has the full letter of the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. That is news by Jonathan Murphy, who sent this to me on Facebook, and thanks to him for that. So Radio Prague is still on the air. Thank goodness for that. I'm really happy about that. Next guy I want to shout out to is Matthew Brown. He wrote to me back in December 4th, and of course he had read about this on Shortwave Central. I read on Shortwave Central about your interest in shortwave radio and wanted to offer you my best wishes with your podcast and blog efforts, as well as school. Is this part of a college project you're working on? I ask because way back when I was in college, I received credit for an independent study project I did concerning the history of shortwave radio. That was back in 1981 when I was attending Marquette University. I felt compelled to write to you because I remember being your age and spending a lot of time listening to shortwave. It's a whole different beast today than what it was back in the good old days. I have great regrets that you missed out on hearing what was available on shortwave back in the 1970s. My dream is to someday write a book about shortwave as it was when I was growing up, having first started listening to international radio stations when I was about 13 in the early 70s. It would be of no value to the mass market, but I have a treasure of memories to share with hobbyists. Just let me know if you'd be interested in hearing a tale or two. Lastly, please let me know how I can further encourage you to stay interested in shortwave. One thing we have in common is that I have my own North American Shortwave Report, which was broadcast once a month on Avensis World Radio India. So it sounds like we have similar interests at the same age. Great to hear of your efforts and best wishes. This is from Matthew Brown. I wrote back to him, and if you're listening to the podcast, Matt, thank you for sending that email, and it was pretty encouraging to hear that someone in their 20s was listening to shortwave and still listens today. I definitely miss those good old days, but I have my own little good old days where I remember some very good programming, even in my teenager years back in the mid to late 90s, even just before all these shortwave stations start going off the air with the BBC with their Play of the Week. I remember that so well, and it was a very good thing to listen to. Now it's like 24-hour news. Not that that's completely bad, but you miss stuff like that. And HCJB had a good variety of programming, being a Christian radio station and all. Some view that negatively, some view it positively. I want to look at it as objective and say it had a mixed bag of good stuff. So unfortunately, they're no longer broadcasting to North America, and that's kind of a sad thing. But I remember those. I have my own little golden age of radio, if you will. I would like to talk about more about your shortwave tales, and if you want, we can schedule an interview if that's cool with you. And just let me know, and of course, well, you have my email address, so that's if you want to reply to that. But if you want to share your comments, anybody, this is open to anybody. If you want to share your past experiences, you can email me at cfreitas2003 at yahoo.com. And I have not mentioned this, and this is not on my website or anything, this what I'm about to announce. I have Skype, and what Skype is, you can talk with various people over the internet using the internet connection. It's sort of like being on the phone. It has a video portion to it too, but if you want to speak with me through Skype, I am on Skype, and the name on there is just Chris Freitas, and I would rather you send me email first, just so I can know, because there are a lot of people that spam through Skype, and I don't know who's who. So just send me email if you want to join, and at least tell me I want to add you onto my Skype account. And Skype is free to use as long as you use in between Skype users. If you want to make calls to other people on like their cell phone or house phone, that they charge some money for that. But if you want to talk with Skype users between Skype users, that is totally free to set up. Anyway, this does it for Shortwave Weekly, and I'm glad you have downloaded this podcast. Please tune in next week. As I mentioned, we'll have a media guide with some interesting with WWCR. The radio clip, I'm going to try to record some Radio Australia in the morning time, since it's getting near the end of the semester. I have a little more free time, if you will. Also, I want to announce one more thing here, and that is not next week. Next week I'll have a podcast up, but on the week of the 20th through the 26th, and on the 27th to January 2nd, which is two consecutive weeks, the weeks where Christmas and New Year's Eve fall on, or New Year's fall on, I will not have podcasts of Shortwave Weekly. There'll be sort of a two-week hiatus. This is starting not next week, but starting on the 20th, and we'll be back on the week of January 3rd. Reason for this, I'll be visiting relatives and friends throughout some of my time off from school. So I'll be out of town a lot and may not be able to do the podcast. But I might post maybe some clipable things of news, what interesting news I'll have on the blog site and on Facebook. And I'll post this news on those websites. But so I'll let you know, on the weeks of the 20th and through the 26th, and on the 27th to January 2nd, there will be no podcasts of Shortwave Weekly. Just want to throw those out there. But next week, I'll try to have a podcast up available. That's the week of the 13th through the 19th. But yeah, you also notice that every other week so far, I've been posting podcasts and skipping a week or so, mainly because I've been busy, not because I don't want to. It's I've been busy, and I never know with schoolwork, especially this time of year when it's now finals and it gets really hectic. But even though my project is due, this is actually part of a project that I'm doing. I'm keeping on with this podcast because I got a good amount of listeners, and I'm going to hope that it builds up into something really awesome within the shortwave radio community. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. And this has been Chris Freitas. I am signing off. I hope you have a wonderful week. Please tune in next week. And I hope you have a wonderful week. 73.